hide here themselves. I think because not the most, one of the most highly educated populations in the world, most PhD per capita in the whole United States.
Boston or Cambridge?
Cambridge.
Right.
Like they have like millions of dollars or surplus money a year.
Yeah.
It's a pretty wealthy city. Of course.
Yeah.
They have MIT and Harvard, the same school. Same, you know.
Yeah.
Concentration, you know. Of course, MIT
is Chomsky school there as well?
Who?
Noam Chomsky.
Oh, yeah. He teaches here at MIT.
Yeah.
Oh, we see him very frequently. We could probably try to connect with his office or something. He's friends with the professor that I work with.
Yeah.
He's very nice, very, very humble, super smart.
Does he, other than speaking, does he get involved in organizing?
He's definitely a revered figure, and I think he's more of the kind of thinker that I like in terms of understanding more structural problems.
Yeah.
You know, so Noam just basically, makes the arguments, you know. I don't really know how much you know of his work.
Yeah, I do a little bit. Like, I read some of his pieces.
He's very much admitting that the U.S. is an empire.
Yeah.
And so we start with the premise that, you know, we're very terrible. and all this oppression is by design, and all this. So this inequality is there for a reason. It's not really just an oops, you know.
Yeah.
It's not an accident, and all these struggles that we have. So he's more of a structural thinker, and this is why I like. We don't have enough of that.
Yeah.
And so the Noam Chomsky's of the world really gives a better, more. I would call it more the advanced stuff that.
Greater context, like longer historical.
I think he picks up with Marshall Gantz and others. Take on, you know, or you can also see that, you know, Marshall Gantz and Larry Gordon and Louis Finfer and others sort of begin where Noam Chomsky stopped, you know, like in a way he's a more global, you know, structural thinker, and then these guys sort of bring it down to more manageable chunks.
Yeah.
And then styles and techniques and so forth, you know?
Yeah.
But Noam Chomsky is more of the structural style that I like to. Like, you have to understand what your problem is, what you're really facing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you kill the. You cut the head of the snake, and then you have.
15 more snakes?
Yes. And that's. And these folks need to be prepared for it, you know? What happens, people start getting tired of fighting so much, and then it's the same bucket, you know? Like, so that's. Just bought them all. So, you know, I did a whole bunch of studies of social movements.
Yeah.
This is part of what we studying.
Are they published?
A PhD. No. That's just for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, for my professors. But what I've been doing a sociology of religion,
yeah,
which is applied to the movements, political movements,
yeah,
and organizing. So that's gonna be the focus on for the PhD programs. It's a double PhD or a combined PhD in public policy and sociology.
Which movements have you studied?
Well, I've been studying some of the junior movements, for example, civil rights movements, and more recently. More sporadically, but movements, for example, of the religious right from the 70s onward through the Billy Graham and the 700 clubs, and all those folks that basically ended up supporting the Reagan years and the rise of the religious right.
Yeah. All US-based movements, or have you
for now? for now. I do sort of, you know, have a background in understanding, for example, the rights of the child in Iran and the transition of the and the role of both Lutheran and Catholic movements in the fall of Marco in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Was it Marco? Yeah, Marco. Philippines. Ferdinand Marco and so on.
Yeah.
So that transition and how that happened and so forth. But international religion is not really. This is a Father Brian Ayres expertise. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that it's incredibly important, you know? And he'll probably know a whole bunch of Ireland and, you know, I hope that we can get to meet him today. I think you'd really like to meet him, you know?
Yeah. He sounds interesting already.
He's incredibly smart. Like, you can, even the way he looks, you can tell he's like this amazing, you know, he's just sharp. Sharp and full of information and wit, and such a. And he's a priest. I mean, he's actually a priest.
Yeah. And so does he still take a parish and stuff?
Yeah. He advises the diocese on some major, you know, issues of housing, particularly and other things. You know.
Yeah.
Catholic Charity sort of reports to him. You know. So yeah. He's a pretty big player. You know.
Yeah.
And he advises both the cardinal and the Vatican. I would say he's a big player. So,
would he be? I'm sure he'd be pleased with the current pope, would he, or pleased enough?
I think he's definitely happier than other times, because I, you know, he doesn't really stay his own positions, but he's a fairly liberal person, you know.
Yeah.
For example, when he was the executive director of the United States Congress of Bishops.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaks for the church in America.
Yeah.
He was the secretary director of that.
Yeah.
So he sort of spoke in favor of some easing of rules or stance on abortion and on migrants and pro-migration, basically.
Yeah.
He from environmental issues, which at the time when he was really like nobody really talked about those. Very progressive on the environmental issues, women's role in the church. Fairly progressive for United States bishops, which are very sort of like right, you know, definitely on the right side of the ledger. You know? So he was highly respected. He issued all kinds of papers on that. So, you know, not to go against necessarily, you know, doctrine and church doctrine, but he's basically easing and the importance of being perceived as more of a moderate voice,
yeah,
as opposed to a rigid, because with the moderate voice, he's more able, the church will be more able to cater or to minister to women and, you know, cater the gays and all this, basically, as opposed to just outright get them a cold shoulder, you know?
Yeah.
So he was more of an advocate for compassionate solutions and respectful solutions and inclusive solutions, you know? And I think he was basically ignored. And then eventually, with the new pope, I think he's very excited about some of these issues, that he's more inclusive, at least respectful of, you know, I don't know that he has moved in any particular solid direction in terms of women's role or gay rights or whatever. No?
Yeah.
It's more of a public stance as opposed to policy. But I think the tone at least is more amicable, and the Pope has definitely taken some stance, especially in terms of inequality, so economic inequality and pro-migrant stances, that I think this particular priest is very happy about,
yeah,
and proud about it. Because it's like, he had to like advise through the, you know, whole situation with the pedophiles and, you know, like all the sex scandals.
Yeah.
So it must have been very hard, you know?
There's a scandal at the minute in Ireland around the burial of children in church ground, children to single mothers and all of this. So, it happened. Hundreds of kids were buried. They weren't killed or anything. You know, they were buried in church graves, unmarked graves, all this type of stuff. And so there's a lot of reaction to that, you know, in the south mostly, in the south of Ireland. And then there's a big sex scandal as well, the paedophilia stuff too. But how do you think about the friction between, you know, I mean, obviously there's the right wing sort of, I don't know if it's mostly the leadership, but right wing trend within the church, and then pushes from the laity and pushes from ordinary people on issues that, I don't know, maybe be at odds with. How do you think the friction balances out between religious worshippers, congregation, and the leadership here in Boston or anywhere else?
Well, in Boston, we happen to have Cardinal O'Malley,
yeah,
who is the person that the Vatican put in charge of the trying to deal with all these sexual abuse scandals worldwide,
right,
through in Ireland. He's done in terms of his general posture and how he settled things here in Boston. He has been received very well, and I think the church has gained a lot of its power within the political structure in the state.
Yeah,
because when the scandal hit, the church not only retrieve from all kinds of other connections that he had with other groups like EBIO and other groups, like they sort of like retreated into their own world, you know.
Yeah.
The church attendance got so great that they had to close and sell a lot of church properties.
Yeah.
So the new cardinal came in, sold a lot of those properties, and settled all those allegations and cases, you know.
Yeah.
So for that, people were, they never thought at 100%, but the overall public basically thought that, you know, he was a monk, basically, and very humble. And so I think the public image of being a very humble and servant and not being in any luxury at all, a very, very austere way, like, I think he went, it was a PR move. It went really well with the public.
Yeah.
And so I think the last 6-7 years, the Catholic Diocese of Boston has really grown again in its powers. It has actually grown in terms of numbers again.
Attendance? That must be against the trend, is it?
Yeah, because it's filled by migrants, by particularly Latino migrants.
Yeah.
So the Latino Catholic community is by far the biggest one, growing. I mean, there's a lot of Catholics that are not necessarily churchgoers. I think overall in the establishment, you know, why Catholic, they still technically Catholic, but they're not really churchgoers, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas the actual base is really migrant base. So it's a big rise in that. Generally speaking, the Catholics are the only one, the group that is actually growing in numbers, as are the Catholics and the Protestants. The only areas that they're actually growing in numbers is in the minority community, especially Latino.
Right.
Both of them, but mostly Catholic.
And where was the
migration?
Where would the Protestant group minorities be coming from?
They're coming from Central America, mostly. And there's a lot of this is the Kennedy School of Government, right? All this,
right?
It's a big mess like that.
Well, this is the campus all here we're on already.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't give you a tour of Harvard. I just was like, you know, really distracted, I guess. We do, okay. Let's stop with that. We'll go back to this conversation, okay? Like, this is the school government, and usually most of the classrooms are here, although now they took temporary office.
Can I turn that up a bit?
What?
Okay to turn?
So that's an actual, it's just a hotel, but it's like a hotel where all the presidents and dignitaries come and stay and then come and speak here at the Kennedy School.
Yeah.
So.
And are most people walking around here are students? Yeah?
No, not right now, because we're in a vacation, the spring break.
Oh, yeah.
this one you can help out just.
Alright, so the office where we're going is in that building in front of us.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we can find a parking spot around here. It's gonna be a challenge. Maybe here, I don't know. Oh, yeah, well, it's kind of hard to get in that corner. So. So let's see if you can actually get out of there. Can you?
Yeah, I can get out. Yeah.
But we're gonna go in.
Perfect.